Good evening. Thank you for...
You okay with your report?
Yeah, I'm already in enough trouble. Good evening. Thank you for having me. It's Yitzchus. I'm going to talk a little bit about prenups. The agenda for the topic is that there's no agenda. It just happened to be a topic that I like. There's nothing that I'm trying to push. The topic of prenups really has about 5-6 different subcategories to it. So I'm going to try to go as fast as possible. Please jump in with questions. And if someone asks a question in the middle, I might just shift to where that question is going and just totally change the share. There's a lot of misconception about what the prenup is in Kali Sorel. If you should do a prenup, if you shouldn't do a prenup. If it's a hashkafa fight, if it's a halacha fight. If it's a problem in Kedushin because you do it. I had a rabbi called me up a few years ago, and he told me that he just pulled the chassan and kala aside because he was by a chassana, and the reshiva by that chassana made the couple write a prenuptial agreement. So he pulled him to side fast to make over the Kedushin. And when you're going to hear what actually the prenuptial agreement is, you're going to realize that that's a little bit idiotic. And there's a lot of misconception of what it is, what it does, what the point is. Should it be done? Should it not be done? Who does it protect? The husband, the wife, the children, everybody, nobody. So I'm going to try to take it step by step. I'm going to start with a very interesting Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. The Rambam brings down that part of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, one of the seven mitzvahs that the B'nei Noach are mechuyevin, and then of course we're also mechuyevin, is dinim. The goyim are obligated to set up a court system. That's what the Rambam passes, because there's an obligation by the goyim to set up a court system. So much so, the Rambam says, the reason why Shimon and Levi killed out the whole city of Shechem after they were ma'anis, they acted inappropriately to Dina, is because nobody in Shechem got up and judged Shechem for what he actually did. Since nobody judged him, they didn't set up a court system to judge him, they were too afraid to judge him, they were over one of the Zion mitzvahs of Dinim, they transgressed and they didn't judge him. It doesn't say what the punishment would have been if they would have judged him. They just didn't judge him. Therefore, they were mechuyev misa, and Shimon Levi had the right to kill out the whole entire city. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. We also have a chiyuv. We have a chiyuv called Mina Shoftim to appoint judges. And there's a machlokes in the Gemara if that mitzvah still exists nowadays. Why? Because in the times of the Gemara, there were two caveats that were important for somebody who wanted to become a judge. You have to be a mumcha in halacha. You really have to know halacha very well. You have to know dal chelk v'shulchan aruch. You really have to know halacha. You have to be a mumcha in halacha. And number two, you have to have smicha. You have to have straight from Moshe Rabbeinu, who gave smicha to Yeshua. And the Rambam in his Akdama to Sefer Mada lists the 40 generations that had Mesirah, Torah of Ashi on smicha. You have to have smicha that allows you to paskin. Nowadays, we don't have smicha, and we don't have mumcha. We have nobody who's a mumcha who really, really knows Kala Tayr Kula. And we have nobody who has smicha straight from Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara asks, if it's true that there's no mumchim and there's no smuchin, and nobody has smicha, how are we allowed to paskin nowadays? How are we allowed to have bezdin? The taich of a dayan, the taich of a judge is somebody who has smicha and somebody who's a mumcha. So the Gemara says, you're right, we're not allowed to have bezdin nowadays. But since Chazal felt, and Chazal saw, that it's impossible for a society to exist without bezdin, they made a shlichus, which literally means they made messengers, and they told every single generation to appoint dayanim, even though you're not roi, even though you're not appropriate, because society can't exist without you. That's what the Gemara says. And there's a machlokes throughout the Lamdas and Rosh Hashivas, what exactly the shlichus ayin mean. Does it mean permission? Does it literally mean a shlichus? Does it literally mean that we're actually shluch hashon k'maisei? When we're ruling, it's like one of the dayanim from 2,000 years ago from the times of the Gemara ruled, the Gemara discusses it. The Gemara also says, not everything did they give us permission. Because again, really they didn't want us to paskin. They didn't want dayanim to paskin because you're not a mumcha and you don't have smicha. So things that as a loss of money, they allowed us to paskin. Things that are common, they allowed us to paskin. For example, kefil is something that we can't paskin nowadays. Kefil is if a ganav steals and gets caught, and he has to return not only the principal of what he stole, he also has to return double that amount. And if it was an animal and he sold that animal or he killed that animal, if it's a sheep, he has to return 4 times the amount. If it's a cow, he has to return 5 times the amount. That's not something that's a loss. That's not a loss to the person who had his thing stolen. It's a punishment. It's a penalty for the goslin. That we don't have a shus to paskin. That you really need a proper bezin, which we don't have. So the Gemara comes out that we have a mitzvah to appoint dayanim nowadays. Just it's not the same type of dayanim. Just we're working with because we're in a bad situation. Goyim, nothing changed. There were no qualifications for a goy to be a judge. From the times of Shechem to now, there were no tests. There was no diplomas. There was no, even now in New York, you don't have to be a lawyer to become a judge. There's no qualification to be a judge unless getting voted in. And, you know, however people make sure they get voted in. There's no qualification. Times of the Gemara, there's no qualifications. Goyim are still on the same status and same standard that they were from before Matan Torah. They're obligated to create a court system. So if anything, it seems like the goyish system is more appropriate than our system. The goyim are working with their real system that existed from before Matan Torah, when they had their mitzvah to judge, and we're stuck. You know, we're doing the best we can. But afal pi kein, there's an issur for you to go to court. Even the bezin system that we have, that is only a b'diavad system because we don't have mumchim and we don't have smuchin, there's an issur to go to court. The machlokes says, what is the issur? The Gemara says in the end of Gittin, based on the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, Ve'elam Mishpatim Asher Tasa Lifneihem, we're allowed to go Lifnei Yidin, we're not allowed to go in front of Goyim. That's the halacha. The question is why we're not allowed to go in front of Goyim? So there are four reasons that brought down at Shulchan Aruch. One reason, because it's like you're doing Avodah Zarah. What does that exactly mean? We'll try to explain. But it's like you're doing Avodah Zarah. The Sma adds in, it's you're showing that the Goyish law is better than Jewish law. Why are you picking Bezdin over the court? Why are you picking the court over the Bezdin? You're showing that Goyish law is better than Jewish law. Rashi, at Parshas Mishpatim, which this is both not a Rambam, not a Gemara, not a Shulchan Aruch, Rashi says Zechil Hashem. Okay, every Avodah that a person does Zechil Hashem. What's more, I mean, we're very calm to say, oh, someone goes to court, they did a Chil Hashem. The only source for that is a Rashi and a Tashbatz, it's a Reish Sadi and a Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, not put down a Shulchan Aruch, not put down a Rambam, and you have to know what the source is. And then there's a Shail of Gzela. There's also a Shail of Gzela. Rabbi Kivega, in the beginning of Simcha Vav, quotes the opinion of the Tashbatz. It's quoting the Mishnah Berurah and Simon Nun Gimel also, that if someone goes to court and gets more money than he would have gotten, if he would have been a Bezin, he's also a Gazlan. Those are the four Yisurim to go to court. The Archaim therefore asks, is there a mitzvah to have to appoint Bezdin? What's his question? We just established that the Gemara says, yeah, it's not the typical Bezdin that we would like. We wish we'd have it every single day, three times a day. Hashiva Shekhtenu Kivari Shayah, the Yatzenu Kivatchilu, we want Hashem to return us a Bezdin system. But is there a mitzvah to appoint a regular Bezdin? Says the Archaim, he's explaining his question. The Pasuk says, Shayftim v'shaytim titan l'cha b'chol sha'arecha. You should appoint judges and shaytim and enforcers in every single nation. The Mechilta says, Yesh lecha shaytim, you have enforcers, yesh lecha shaytim, then you can have judges. Ein lecha shaytim, if you don't have enforcers, ein lecha shaytim, you can't have judges. We don't have enforcers nowadays. We don't have authority. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael, in certain places, they could actually call the cops on somebody if they don't listen to a pshat bezdin. But we don't have that nowadays. So says the Arachayim HaKadosh, if you don't have shaytim, you don't have shaytim. There's no mitzvah to have bezdin. There's no obligation to go to Bezin. There's no mitzvah to go to Bezin, says the Archaim. You don't have to have Bezin if you can't enforce it. Ad kan divrei Archaim HaKadosh. Comes along the Sefer Kanfei Yonah.
According to him, you can go to a Geisha Bezin?
I'm going to add now, can't answer that part. Comes along the Sefer Kanfei Yonah, he says it's not what the Archaim means. The Sefer Kanfei Yonah, l'chur, it's poshut what he's saying, but he's the first place I saw it inside, so I'm going to quote it. The Sefer Kanfei Yonah is written by Rabbi Yonah Reis from Chicago, beautiful Sefer. It's put out 3-4 years ago, or even less. He says the Archaim never ever meant. The Archaim never ever meant that there's no mitzvah to have Bezin. He meant if you can't enforce it, then there's no mitzvah to go to Bezin. So what's our job? To figure out how we can enforce it. There is a legal system how you can enforce Bezin. For example, there's an arbitration agreement. You could go to Bezin and you could sign an arbitration agreement, which is a legally bound agreement, that whatever Bezin rules could be entered into court as a judgment. If the person doesn't pay, I can give them all the power that the legal system allows me to have and to do by going to a Bezin. And then there is a mitzvah. But the mitzvah is if you can't figure out, if Taki, you're living in a city that you can't figure out the Bezdin system, says the Divrei Chaim, if you live in a city that has no Bezdin system, and the Goyim don't allow us to have a Bezdin system, says the Divrei Chaim, then you're allowed to go to court. More than that, the Divrei Chaim says, everybody knows there's something called a Heter HaKos, right? What's a Heter HaKos? So the defendant, the other party, doesn't want to come with you to Bezdin. You go to Bezdin, you call them up, and you say, by the way, Shimon owes me $10. Right? I want to go to court. Bezdin says, well, you can't go to court. Chil Hashem, like you're doing Avodah Zarah. You're like, yeah, but it's only over $10. Doesn't make a difference. You got to go to Bezdin. Bezdin sends him 3 warnings, 3 invitations to come. He doesn't show up. Bezdin issues a Heter HaKos. You could go to court and get your money. Why? If it's such a big Avera, for $10 I'm allowed to go do Averas all of a sudden? It's Chil Hashem. It's like you're doing Avodah Zarah. Okay, so it's $100, $1 million. Since when are you allowed to go do averas for money? He says, Rechem, it's not an avera. We just established that if there's no bezin in your city, if bezin doesn't exist, there's no issue to go to court. When the defendant showed you that bezin doesn't exist by him after getting three invitations, it's like your city doesn't have a bezin, and therefore you're allowed to go to court. That's the Rechem's opinion. The Vilna Gaon argues, and we'll try to get to the Vilna Gaon a little bit later. He has a different taich, and what does the word heter arkais mean? And Alochim Paskins are going. But that's the Divrei Chaim, that's the Tzanzer of Paskins, Aloch Lamaisa. When the defendant makes believe Bezin doesn't exist, there's no issue to go to court. So Rabbi Yonah Reis in the Sefer Kaviani explains to our Chaim HaKadosh that our job is to make sure that there's an enforceability of going to Bezin. To go sit down by a lawyer and say, look, I'm going to Bezin, I want to make sure whatever ruling they say, whatever judgment they say, will be enforced in court. And if not, then you're not mechuyav to go. But it's your job to figure out how to create the shaitrim, how to create the enforcers. And therefore, Rabbi Eliashiv has a tshuva, where a person said, I want to go to Bezin, I'm asking, and I'm going to listen to what Bezin says. Why don't I sign an arbitration agreement? Yechesh b'ksher, yechesh, I'm not going to listen to the psach. So the guy's like, number one, yeah. But number two, Rabbi Eliashiv passed him in the tshuva. He says, you're not mechuyav to go to Bezin if they don't make you sign an arbitration agreement. If there's no way for you to enforce the award, the judgment that Bezin is going to give, there is no obligation to go to such a Bezin. So the Bezin says, we tell people to come to us, we don't make them sign anything. Okay, so you're not mechuyav to go. That's the truth of Rabbi Eliashiv. Based on the cheshbon, the whole reason Bezin exists is because we have shaitim. Now I'm going to focus now, I'm going to jump, because this is a topic that we could spend a few days on, but I'm going to jump straight to marriages right now. We get married, and there are certain things that we promise ourselves in the Torah's eyes, and certain things in the Rabbanan's eyes that we promise when we get married. The Gemara says there are 10 tnoim. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, 10 tnoim in the ksuba. We get married, we have a ksuba that says, Izan, the Esfarnes. You know, every single agreement that we all go into, usually we have our lawyers look over, we look over, we at least understand. An average chassan, 23 years old, you know, the day of his chassana, he has this, his rav who sits under the chuppah, you know, reads with a broken Aramaic voice, fast on the mic because everybody's getting nervous that he has to go fast and reads this ksuba. Nobody has a clue what it says, and this is our obligation, but we're obligating to our wives. It's kedai, go home one night, just like, you know, look over what you promised your wife, but there's a whole ksuba that says, Izan, Vesparnes, what I'm going to do, I will support you. Believe it or not, in the tnoim, there are some people that sign a tnoim. We, the Litvisha people, most people probably signed the tnoim the day of the chasana, right? So it used to be a tnoim was that from the day of the engagement until the chasana, that we're making a bunch of deals and we're going to keep to the deals. That's what the tnoim meant. Rav Moshe Feinstein changed the tnoim for many, many different reasons in America, and that you do it on the day of the chasana, and it says all the agreements that we made, we have kept until this day. In the tnoim, it says in there that one of the things, you know, let's say it says, okay, the father of the girl is going to give a house, the father of the boy is going to give it. Oh, it's a whole agreement that's made. And then it says in the tnoim, we're not going to hold secret anything from one to another. That's what it says in the tnoim. So there's a machlekes, believe it or not, Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Marsham. If that's just the bracha, if you want to have a successful marriage, al yalimu zemizeh, don't hide anything from your spouse, or is that a chiv? Is that a chiv? I had a din Torah by me where a lady was teveya to open up the accounts of her husband. She wanted to know what he was spending all the money with, because they came into marriage with a certain amount of money. It was a young couple, married I think for a year and a half, 2 years, and her father, herself from working a couple of years, his father himself put in, they had probably $250,000, and a year and a half later he said that they were going to split the account, there's nothing left. So she wanted to see the account, and he said, well, it's your business. I said, there's nothing left. Look at the balance. The balance on the place says $6,000 left. Who are you to see everything that's in there? And she was to the investment. I want to see the accounts. I want to see what you spent the money on. Maybe you hid it, investments, or just, you know, you were out having a good time. And he said, no. And that was a shaila. I never got such a shaila investment. We sat down, and we saw that it's a machlekes from Shlomo Kluger and the Marsham. Rav Shlomo Kluger says that it says in the Ksuba Ali Alim Uzem, he said the wife can't tell the husband, therefore I want to see it. It's a bracha. If you want to have a good marriage, don't hide stuff. The Marsham said the lady can be teveya the husband to open up all accounts to see all, where all the money is, because that's what you promised in the tenor. We passed him, because it was machlekes, we passed him, he has to open up the accounts to Bezin, we'll look at it, and if it looks like it was embezzled, we'll show her the accounts. And we open up the accounts and.
Should she go and request that?
In court? Yeah. The court should be able to request it.
I'd say, would the court tell us to
see it? Very possibly. They would do discovery, a proper discovery, 100%. So we opened the account, was just, you know, I made a joke to someone when I was looking it over. It looked like my bank account when my wife was on bed rest. You know, every single breakfast in a different restaurant, lunch, somewhere else. Something like that. It looked just like you spent like $5,000-$6,000 a week just on, you know, on pizza. So there was no major embezzlement. It was just the guy who just didn't have a chashivas for money. But the point is, there's Ali Ali Muzem. So there's many things we promise in the ksuba. part of the things we promise in the Ksuba, which this part of it is Durabanan, is if we will get divorced or the husband will pass away, if she is a basula when we're getting married, I am promising her 200 zuz. If she's a ba'ula, if someone marries a lady, second marriage, I'm promising 100 zuz. Nowadays, most people promise 200 even to a ba'ula, even to somebody who lived with somebody else before. That's what we promise in the Ksuba. I don't know if anyone paid attention to the day of the chasana. Anyone over here signed their ksuba? No, right? You have two witnesses who signed the ksuba. There's a huge debate in New York State if that's a valid document at all. If two people have a document that says they're going to do something and all they do is have witnesses who signed it instead of themselves, the bride and groom signing it, if that's a valid document at all. Many times I was in court and the judges turned to me about the ksuba and they asked me to explain them the ksuba and they said, why doesn't the groom and bride sign this piece of paper? And I have to explain them because Allah, you know the whole to do. And believe it or not, there are certain places who started making the chassid akala sign on the bottom. You know, they add a line, sign, you know, it's out of chassid, it's out of kala. The chassid and kala? Because the halacha only means eidim. A star needs to be proven. A star is a raya that I came to a verbal agreement. Transferred from a verbal agreement, we have a star. We have eidim that say that they saw the verbal commitment. So that's why it's good enough. Legally, it's a major shah. There are certain cases that if you have people who are testifying or witnessing to a fact that two people made in 42 or 43 states in America, a verbal commitment is binding. Problem is the burden of proof is impossible. So if you have a burden of proof over here, you know, then it would be bound. But we'll get to that a little bit later. The question is, if you have video proof, I don't know if that. The question is, why does this bring up a concern? We all know, and this happens very often. And whenever I say this, and that's why I don't like saying it, I get many phone calls on the spot. If someone doesn't know where their ksuba is, they're not allowed to be miyachid with their wife. Right? Everyone over here is thinking, like, where my ksuba is right now. And if someone does not know where their ksuba is, they're not allowed to be miyachid. The reason why the chacham were misakin ksuba, is because it shouldn't be easy for a husband to divorce his wife. It shouldn't be able to be easy. And therefore, if she can't prove that you owe me money if you're going to divorce me, they're not allowed to live together. The Gemara says there's a question if they're not allowed to live together or they can't even be miyachid. Very often I get phone calls at 12, not very often, but at least once or twice a week, phone calls at 12:30, 1 o'clock at night from a couple, we can't find our ksuba, you know, and of course they don't have a babysitter. Only the wife has to know. It's the wife's paper. The husband knowing where the ksuba is doesn't help. It's her document. The wife has to know where the ksuba is. The wife should know where the ksuba is. The Rashba says a chiddush gadol. Someone asked the Rashba, are you allowed to live in a city where they don't allow ksuba? Are you allowed to live in a city where the government got up and the government said, Dina the Malchusa, Dina our city is, that a ksuba is not valid? Because the whole point of the ksuba is that you shouldn't be able to get rid of your wife without knowing that there's going to be a penalty. There's going to be a certain amount of money that you're going to have to compensate, and we're going to get to the value of the money soon. Are you allowed to live in such a city? Because that in essence means you don't have a ksuba. And the Rashba has a whole shiloh. And the Rashba says, B'yevi, you're telling me you live in such a city. It was a city in Mitzrayim. You're telling me you live in such a city. Okay, but you probably sneak to a Bezdin, and the Bezdin will enforce it, even though the government doesn't. But if you have no way to enforce it, then you cannot live with your wife.
Is that why you're not
going to
make you sign a marriage license also?
Yes, 100%, which maybe I'll get into soon. Therefore, a person has to know, do we have our ksuba nowadays? A person wants to live with his wife, wants to be miyachid with his wife. Whoever's miyachid with their wife without a ksuba, it says in Masechtas Kal in the beginning, it's like being boil on either bebeis arusasai. It's like having an inappropriate relationship. Do we have ksuba nowadays? Could we enforce it? Could someone go to court with a Hebrew Aramaic document? I hear Kaseda from the judges, because we're going to soon speak about maybe the prices of ksuba, right? And there's a machloikis from Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, who believes it's between $2,000 and $2,500, and Rabbi Moshe, who believes it's your last year of living expenses that you lived, right? Which could be fairly high. Minimum 100 pounds of silver, which my last dinner came out to $21,600. So we're talking about a nice discrepancy. So
how do you get to those numbers? It's 200
How much is 200 zuz nowadays? Exactly, that's the machlokes.
Rabbi Schiffman, now, before he made the wedding, I don't know where it came up. We were talking in shul here. What was it? And he was saying that since today, by a divorce, the money is much different. The negotiations in court are much different.
We'll get to that. That's a machlokes for itself. It's not so difficult. I'll try to address that. Does the ksuba make a difference nowadays that the money settlements in court are going differently? The question is, why is that person being in court to begin with? But we'll try to get that soon. So I very often, the judges call me up because my business is located next door to the courthouse, and I became close with a lot of judges. And believe it or not, most of the judges in Rockland County Courthouse are Jewish. None of them are religious. They're Jewish, and the 2-3 goyim happen to know halacha way more than the Jewish people know halacha. And they'll call me up and tell me, I don't understand. The husband's telling me this document's worth $2,500. The wife is telling me this document's worth $40,000. Which one is it? How can you have one document that has two separate prices? I'm going to start explaining this. It's not a conversation that I want to have. But it's a question. Do we have a ksuba b'chlal? Do we have a ksuba? And if you don't have a ksuba, so what are we doing?
Why don't they write a value in
subset rights? I'm gonna try to get slowly to every single one. I'm just trying to lay down the foundation. One, I'm gonna jump to another topic, and then I'm gonna try to tie in all the topics. We know, and it's a big sensitive topic, or not so sensitive topic, a man is the one who gives a get to his wife. And there are numerous amount of stories about certain divorces where a man doesn't want to give a get. Either he wants to receive a different settlement, or he just wants to punish his wife, or he feels that he hurt her and this is his way of taking revenge. Now, as a disclaimer, I've never, ever, ever found somebody who did better because he hasn't given a get. Just, that's my personal opinion. I've been involved in gittin for a long time. I probably did myself over 1,200 gittin. It was misad over 1,200 gittin myself, and I've never ever saw that this is one of the reasons that someone actually won. Someone told me, oh, I held on to get. Actually, a few weeks ago, I was in Bar Park. I gave a shir for second marriages. Only chassidim. And on the way, I was thinking, what should I speak about? I was speaking for a bunch of chassidim. I'm a literature guy. They told me I could only speak Yiddish. Nobody even understands English over there. I'm thinking, it's an organization called Achim Baderech. The words were, on the brochure, Oifim Veg to Bayesheni. On the way to Bayesheni. I was thinking, starting a joke, you know, Bayesheni also fell apart. You know, I wasn't sure where I'm going. So in the middle, literally 10, 20 minutes before I came to Bar Park, I got a phone call from a psychologist, who I happen to know, who he calls me with all his shaylos, and he deals with second marriages very often. So I said, no, if you would have chassidim, what would be your point? And he gave me all shmuz to tell them that, you know, even though they're divorced, they have to still, you know, take care of themselves, they still have to shower, they still have to go out, they can't just stay at home. He gave me a whole shoes what I should speak about. I walk into the room, there were, I would say, 60, 70 people there, and it was a very tense situation. And like, guys like, oh, so you work in Gittin? Yeah, you know, the ladies, and like, everyone was like, just a very bitter situation. So I started the conversation, I changed the whole topic on the spot. I said, guys, I want to ask a question. Who in this room over here has fought, has won, and is actually happy? Nobody raised their hand. I'm like, okay, who in this room fought and won? No, I'm like, who fought? Everyone's hands like a flying up, right? I said, I've never found the case, but what's Takap Shah? I get this question very, very, very often from Friar people, and I never really had an answer. We had a case where a lady opened up a case in Bezdin. She was off the Derech Nebuch, and she wanted to get married again. And her uncle, who was a firm person, who was a well-known, respected Rav, used to be a Rav in a different part. Now he's actually a Rav in Flatbush, a very well-respected person, told her, you get married without a get. You know, we're disowning you. So she called the Bezdin for a get. Her husband was in the Army, American Army. But we try to figure out, we call him up. He doesn't want to answer. He doesn't want to talk to us. So I have a guy who works best in the Bezdin. His job is just to locate people, just to figure out. So he went into Facebook, typed the person's name, and he saw who his commander in the army was, who his captain was, who his chapel was, you know. And he reached out to those people and saying, look, this is the situation, something called a get. He doesn't want to give it. What could we do? So the guy told us, one of his commanders in the army said, look, he's very, very into awards and medals. He enjoys awards and medals. If you could create a medal, Free the Wife medal, something like that, he'll come give a get. This is a true story. I know it sounds funny, it's a true story. So we went to the store, we spent $50, we made some fancy medal, some cute medal. We called the guy up, we said we have a medal. The guy came down, this was Friday afternoon, 11 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock when the guy actually came down. He came down with his commander. And we did a get. I wanted to make it a nicer place than the Bezdin. I did it in our semantics conference room in Muncie. And we wrote the get, and then we gave him, you know, we gave him the medal. We took pictures, the whole to-do. And in the middle, his Goyish captain asked me, he says, what's this business over here? She's not allowed to get married because he doesn't want to give a get. I had to convince him. So I happened to be, that morning I was learning Hazav. And an answer flew into my head. I don't know if it's Emes, but it's, I enjoy it. I think it's a cute answer. The Gemara says in Hazav that Midoraisa, Midaraisa mois is kindness. What does that mean, midaraisa mois is kindness? If I want to transfer something into my possession, the way I could acquire that object without touching it is by giving the seller money. I give him $100, he takes the $100. With that $100, I'm kina that article. The Gemara says, the Gemara discusses even two different coins. If I have silver coins, I have copper coins, which one is kinah? The other one, how do you make the other? Mois is kinah. The Gemara says the Rabbanan were oiker that kinyan. The Rabbanan said you can't rely on mois kinah anymore. It doesn't work anymore. It can't transfer something into your possession. Why not? The Gemara was scared. Shema yemu. Maybe the seller is going to say nisrufu chitecha ba'aliyah, that I had a fire last night and you had your wheat that you didn't actually take into your possession yet. You just gave me $100 and now it's yours and it got burnt. This machlokes in the Rishonim, shema yemu, doesn't mean that there's actually going to be a fire and he's just going to decide not to save it because it's not his, or he's just going to lie. He's going to say, oh, it got stolen, it got burnt. So therefore the Rabbanan said it's not yours until you actually pick it up and take it for yourself. That's what the Gemara says. Says the Gemara, what happens if the buyer wants to back out of the deal? He gives the person $100, he's not yet kainit because he didn't make mashikha, and then the next morning he's thinking about it, he's like, you know what, not for me, it's not a good deal. Get it better somewhere else. And he wants to do it, he wants to back out of the deal. So the Gemara says he could back out, but we curse such a person. It's the only place that the Gemara says you curse such a person. And it's brought like this in Shulchan Aruch, in Chashmish with Simmer Reish Dalet, based on the Gemara of Chesam Abayz and Bab Metziah. We curse him and we say, Misha Paro, he who paid back, he who punished, the Anshidara Mabel and the Anshidara Flaga, who Asili Paro, he will pay back, Mimisha Einu Midiburi, to the person who doesn't stick to his word. Which is a very interesting thing by a Gazlan, a guy who actually goes up to your house and steals $100 or embezzles your money. We don't curse him. We say, pay back. Not even careful nowadays because we don't have just a possible careful. But somebody who backed out of his word, well, what's going on here? And we compare the curse of the Dar HaMabu. We all know what happened by the Dar HaMabu. The world got destroyed. He who punished, that what's going on? So the Avnezer quotes a Chedush Erim and a Cheskuyi that says something so, so powerful. What happened by the Dar HaMabu? The Dar HaMabu, the Cheskuyi brings down in Parashas Noach. People were Lamdonish Ganovim. What does that mean? Everyone knew that you're only obligated and punished when you steal from a Pruta and more. So everyone, when they stole a half an apple, they can't be punished. They're not gazlan in the Torah's eyes. The Torah said you're only obligated to get punished on Geneva when it's a pruta and more. Less than a pruta, you're not punished. So they stole a half apple. Another person even stole a half apple. Another person even, until the person was left with nothing. So they couldn't be punished on Geneva because they didn't steal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look, I made a takana, midaraisa. I had a reason why I said from a pruta and more. Because I felt like, you know, if you live in a world that every single time you rub against a person's house and you make them go down a half a cent, you're going to be, your person's not going to be able to live normally. Moshe Rashi says in Yuvamistaf and Chesim Abayz that Goyim don't have this heter of Pruto. A Goy who steals even less than a Pruto is obligated on Geneva. And a Yid who steals from a Goy is also obligated on Geneva less than a Pruto. But to another Yid, it's a Pruto and more. And you went and you used my beautiful Torah against me? You went and you took my Torah to hurt somebody else? That's unacceptable. That's worse than doing a straight out Geneva. You went, the Torah says you could back out of a deal because we're scared the seller is going to hurt you and is going to say maybe wheat got burnt. And you went and you used that against the seller and say, oh, I'm going to back out of the deal because it's not mine yet. Because what the Torah did for my favor to protect me, I'm going to use to hurt somebody else. You get cursed. Rav Shamsher Refolher says the reason why a man gives a get, the reason why does a man give a get? That a man should know Shalom Bayis is in his control. He's the one who has the power to set the tone in his house. He's the one who has all responsibility to make sure that his house is beautiful and is working b'shalom u'b'shalvo. And if he gives a get, sometimes it doesn't work out, he should know he's more guilty. It was really him. That's why he gives the get. And he should know, and it should be his focus, that he's divorcing his wife and his wife's not divorcing him. That's what Shamsher Refolher says in Parashas Ki Tzeitzei. He brings raya from Psukim. And you're going to go use that get against her? The reason why the Torah said you're giving the get is to show that the Shalom Bayis is in your hands. And you're going to go use that beautiful Torah against her and control her and use it for a manipulation to get some kind of better deal and not give her the get? I turned to this command and I said, it's the same thing. Such a person will get cursed. Such a person is like the same thing. Using it when you steal, when you're wrong, people do it, people make mistakes, people do it on purpose. The Torah understands that the Torahs give punishments. But to use a Torah against somebody, to use our beautiful sacred Torah against somebody, that's unacceptable. Trying to tie everything together. Many years ago, a Yid named Mordechai Willick was one of the yeshivas of Yeshiva University, had a story in his community of a person who didn't want to give a get. And it was a long time until the person actually gave a get. He actually made the person leave. Board members of the shul wanted to fire him for kicking out someone in their community. He said, it's either myself or him. It was a whole, it caused a huge destruction in his community. Rav Mordechai Wolf decided, this doesn't make sense. We have to do something about it. If we can't enforce the Bezdin system, we don't have a Bezdin b'chal. If we can't enforce halacha, we don't have a Torah. It used to be you lived in a city called Krakow, and there was a Bezdin. There was no court system there. Everybody listened to the Bezdin. You didn't listen to the Bezdin. You were excommunicated. And it was a simple Shulchan Aruch that we had guidelines that you listened to. Things were beautiful. But we don't live like that. We live in a time that people use Shulchan Aruch to manipulate. A defendant gets a summons from a Bezdin, he wants to go to a different Bezdin. Because he wants to go to Bezdin where he knows the plaintiff is not going to go. And I could tell you, I could sit here and tell you hundreds of stories of how you could manipulate Shulchan Aruch. There are people who have a job. It's called a tain. It's their job to figure out how to manipulate Shulchan Aruch to get their client's best interest. So you don't have a system. So Rabbi Willick said, we have to create a system. So he flew to Eretz Yisrael. And he went to Rabbi Zalman Lechemi Goldberg. Rabbi Zalman Lechemi Goldberg is the son of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Rohrbach, one of the Gedolei Yisrael and Gedolei Paiskim, especially in Ebenezer and Chesh Mishpat that we have nowadays. He should have a full Shlomo. He's not well. And he went to Rabbi Zalman Lechemi and he said, we have to fix something. Rabbi Zalman Lechemi said, based on a Nachla Shiva, on a whole Ramah, we should create something called a Heskim Nisuin, a prenuptial agreement. That all it says in there is, if Chas V'Shalom, one of the couples, gets separated, this is the Bezdin we're going to resolve our disputes. A simple arbitration agreement. Just like any deal a person goes into. So if they're smart, they'll write what the dispute resolution is going to be. In case there's going to be a fight, we are going to go. Don't leave it up for grabs. And then you have all those issues. I get phone calls day in and day out of people tell me, oh, I got in a fight with somebody, he wants to go to that Bezdin, I want to go to that Bezdin, and we're not figuring anything out. I say, it's your fault. You went into a deal. You should have wrote a dispute resolution. What will happen when we get a fight? You could write, I want to go to a specific Rav. Maybe we'll touch on to the topic. If you're allowed to go to an arbitration firm that's not even Jewish, the Pamelis of Simcha Vavol, there's no Isser. Only a court system is Isser. You want to go to mediation. You want to go to a Rav. You want to go to a doctor. You want to go to a psychologist. Just write what you're going to do. Don't leave it open. And then everyone has to fight what Shulchan Aruch really meant and what Shulchan Aruch really said. Have a dispute resolution. So they did it. They set it up. And then they thought, okay, what's going to happen? You're going to come to Bezdin, and you're not going to listen. And now what? You come to Bezdin, the Bezdin says, you have to give the get. You don't have to give the get. And now what? In the times of Shulchan Aruch, when there was taka proper Bezdin system, if Bezdin would say, you're part of the people that we're allowed to force to give a get, the Mishnah goes on in Ksubis, and the Mishnah says, there are people who you're allowed to force to give a get. Certain people who act a certain way, you're allowed to force them to give a get. And there are things to do to force. Not everybody you're allowed to force, but if you're the people of Elu, Shekhaif, and Laitzi, these are the people who we force. And from the times of the Gemara, it changed. Because the Ramah, the Mishnah says, one of the people are, when the wife says, Masalai, he disgusts me. Came along the Rishayim, the Rashba says, look, every lady learned Gemara now. They just know what to say when they come to Bezdin. We have to take that out of the equation. And the lady's not Nemet to say Masalai. There was a whole Shiloh, is a lady Nemet to say Nevalti Benido? He was with me inappropriately. The Ramah came along in Simeon Zion, based on a Chubas Ridvaz and a Meiri. A lady's not Nemet. Things changed. And Baruch Hashem, we have Svarim, and you know, like Kalatar Kula. We have Chumras and Kulas. But there was a Mishnah that said, Elu Shekhaif and Laitzi, and they forced the person. However, they forced them. They beat him, they hit him, they sanctioned him, whatever they did, they kicked him out of it. They did certain things. But nowadays we can't do that. Right? It doesn't exist. Or maybe it does, but that's a different topic. Of course you can. I'm gonna get how it works. Then the Mishnah says, Elu Shekhaif lo Hitzi. These are the people, you can't force them, but they're obligated. Comes along with Rabbeinu Tam, says Rabbeinu Tam, and what does it mean that they're obligated? What does that exactly mean? Rabbeinu Tam says, yes, I believe that the Mishnah is coming to sell something called Hachok, that became known as Hachok is the Rabbeinu Tam, because of Rabbeinu Tam. He says, the Mishnah means you're allowed to be marchik them. You could say you can't come down to shul with us, you're not going to get an aliyah if you don't behave like this. There are certain things you're allowed to do to incentivize them and to force them to give a get, and the get will still be a good get. Because the main thing of a get is a get has to be given for someone's free will. Now again, if he's part of the people you're allowed to force, so you're allowed to force him to give a get even against his free will. And there's a machlokes why, Rambam and Ran, not a topic for now. If there are people who are chayiv, you're allowed to force him based on what chayiv means. Excommunicate, not give him aliyah, kick him out of the community, force him to stay in a community and he can't do business elsewhere, whatever hachlokes Rabbeinu Tam means. And then there are people that there's no halacha. They're not part of the people who are chayiv, and they're not part of the people chayiv. And old Bezdin could say, Royi Ligarish, you should give her a get. She's not interested in staying with you, but there's nothing we could do. But nowadays, all three don't exist. All three, there's nothing to do by kviyah, there's nothing to do by chayiv, and there's not. So in Israel, for example, if someone has a psak of ilu shekayif from lahitzi, and the guy doesn't want to give the get, they throw him into jail. If a guy has a psak of chayiv legarish, they take away his passport, they close his bank account, and they take away his license. That's the Israel law that the Rabbanut made. But in America, we can't do it. There's actually a new law that if an American who actually has no ties to Israel goes to Israel and he has a psak against him of chayiv or kaifin, they'll take away his passport. It's a new law that was created about 5 months ago. Rabbi Lau, the Rabbi Rashi, came to America. He sat with a bunch of Batadinim. He explained the new law. He went through the new law. I'm not getting into halacha about it, but it's a new law that was actually just recently created and it was actually done. But in America, what could you do? So Rav Zalman Lechemi came out with a cheshbon. This is a story going already from 1986. Rav Zalman Lechemi Goldberg came out with a cheshbon. The cheshbon was to put in some type of monetary penalty. Put in a monetary penalty. If Beis Din says to give a get and you don't give a get, you will be penalized a certain amount of money every single day for not giving a get. The problem with that is, such a get's not a good get. Because we just said a get has to be given from your own free will. So if he's part of the people who are Elu Shekayif and Lahitzi, which not every single person's part of, then you're good to go. If he's a part of Elu Shekayif, you're not allowed to give him a penalty. So how is the get a good get? So that itself is a conversation that the Ramah discusses in Kuf Lamed Aleph, and the Ramah says you should be machmer, not to penalize people to accept upon themselves to give a get. If not, they will be penalized. And there's a machlokes, the Teres Gittin, the Nesivis, says everybody does it. And the Chazanish says you're allowed to do it. It's a machlokes what that means. But let's move along. So Reb Zalman Lechemi Goldberg sent this question to Reb Tzimbalis. I don't know if anyone over here heard of Reb Tzimbalis. He used to be the Rosh HaBezin of the Rabbanut of Tel Aviv. Reb Yashiv used to send all the Shilas and Gittin to him, one of the G'dayli Yisrael, Chesh Mishpat and Gittin. He's still living, he's now older, and he's not active anymore, but he's still living in Tel Aviv, a huge Talmud Chacham. And Reb Tzimbalis came up with a cheshbon. Every person when they get married, Midaraisa is obligated to support their wife. They're obligated. You're obligated to support your wife. It's part of Mizaynus. Write an amount of money that you're obligated to support your wife. And write, she's not going to come after that money until Beis Din says that you're obligated to give a get. Write $150 a day, $200 a day. I will support my wife $150 a day. As long as we're living together, she forgives that amount of money. The second we cease to be living together and Beis Din says you should give a get, I'm not forgiving that amount of money. Because anyways, you're obligated. Something that you're obligated to do, you can't be called a penalty. You're obligated. And Rav Zalman Lechemi took it and he changed the lashon. He just wrote, the second Beis Din, and that's actually what it says in the RCA's prenuptial agreement, the second Beis Din says that I'm obligated to give a get, or I should give a get, or I should give a get, not even obligated, because if you're chayiv, you're obligated, we have other stuff we could do. But the second Beis Din says I should give a get, and I will support my wife $150 a day, $54,000 a year. According to their statistics, anyone who signs this agreement, 98% will give a get psychologically of knowing that $150 a day could leave their account. They give you a judgment once or twice a month. You could go to court and take away the money. The question is that good or not? And what's the politics behind it? Rabbi Eliashiv was not happy with this. I heard this from people who went to Rabbi Eliashiv. There are many different versions. I myself was by Rabbi Eliashiv, so of course I'm going to say the version where I was. Rabbi Eliashiv felt that an average person, when they're getting married, does not understand what $150 is a day. $54,000 a year, they don't understand it. Especially somebody living like a Me'ish Arum, right, who support is nowhere near $150 a day. And the mezainis that you're obligated your wife is based on the minig of your city. So if you live in a very, very, very wealthy community, you're obligated to support on a very, very wealthy standard. If you live in a very, very poor community, like Me'ish Arum, you're not obligated to give her more than the standards of the community. The Mishnah says, "Hakol Milan Ve'Emaridin." You don't have to bring her up on a standard that she was living when she was single. So you can get away with bread and butter if you're lucky, Me'esharm. Where's that $150 a day? So you're promising to support her way more than you're obligated to. So what's wrong with that? The guy wants to support his wife more. There's a halacha something called asmachta. Asmachta in a nutshell means if someone promises something contingent on something that he's not sure if it's going to happen, he is not obligated to fulfill what he said, because we could say he never really thought that was going to happen. What does that mean? You sit down and you have a poker game and you say, okay, whoever wins gets the pot, and you lose and you give the person the other money, that person's a ganav of the rabbanim. To boil that down in Shulchan Aruch and Shinayin. Why? Because you never really planned on giving the money. You thought you were going to win. And therefore, you did something contingent. If you have a document that's contingent on something, l'halacha, that document is not valid l'halacha. If you have a document that says, oh, if we break up our partnership, then we're going to split up the investment like this, like this, like this, that document is not valid halacha. Unless you write the words, very simple, Deloika asmachta. None of this is considered asmachta. Or Belisha Uchali Patim etainamina asmachta. I'm not going to come and say this is asmachta. Which is very, very simple. But if you're going to come to Besdin, with a working partnership agreement that has something that's contingent, and you're going to lose, and then you're going to be upset at the Bezin that they lost because, of course, they don't know what they're doing, and all you needed to add was two words, you know, you feel pretty pretty ridiculous. So the Asha said, this isn't a smachta. If I'm going to get divorced, who's planning when they're getting married if they're going to get divorced? And therefore, you're promising money. Therefore, you're not obligated to give the money. Therefore, they're taking out the money. That's a penalty. You're giving a get because you don't want to pay money that you're not obligated to pay. That get's not a good get. That's what Rabbi Asha was afraid of. And he's afraid of, it's going to get even out of control. From 150, you'll go up to 250, you'll go up to 500, you'll go up to 1,000. You'll have some chassan by the chuppah saying, you know what, $2,000 a day. And these are big, big shilas of asmachta. The way the Bezin of America got to $150 a day, $54,000 a year, I saw they went to a forensic accountant who went into the communities where their people from the YU, RCA, hang out. And they went to their communities and went through an average day life spending. How much is it with cars, gas, taxes. Okay, and that's where they came to the cheshbon. They took it very, very serious. It wasn't just a random number. But if it's going to be more than that, or if it's contingent, is that okay or not? And that's the big shiloh. So we don't really have so much more time. It's almost 9:00. Basically, like this. So okay, the shiloh is what. So someone asked a good question over here. Why did you write the leika smachta? So they do. They do. Why wasn't Rabbi Yashiv happy with that? Rabbi Yashiv had a chumra from the Rambam. Now you have to understand, if you're dealing with a chayish mishpah claim, right? I made a deal contingent on you. If this building gets sold for this amount of money, then I will give you. And you wrote a shayla of a smachta. So it's a machlekes now. Okay, we're talking about a shayla of mammon. Over here, if you're forcing the get and it's not good because of that, it's not a good get. The children will be mamzer. So Rabbi Yashiv took this extremely more stringent. Therefore, people found contradictions of different truths from Rabbi Yashiv about a smachta where he ruled differently in Chayshimish, but it's not a contradiction. I understand to be more machmir. That I fully understand, and I heard that from Rabbi Yashiv myself. That you can't take anything he said for Evan Ezer to Chayshimish, but when I was buying, when we drafted a prenup in front of him, there was a certain case that he asked us to draft a prenup, and we went down from Bezin to Rabbi Yashiv's house, and we drafted. But why doesn't that help? The Rambam's opinion is, but we don't pass like the Rambam, but Rabbi Yashiv felt to go be machmer because the shayla of gittin. The Rambam's opinion is something that's a straight out present that has no halacha reason or no reason why I should be offering you that money, even a delay kasmachta doesn't work. Reb Tzimbalist, in a sefer called Tfunis that just came out a year ago, he wrote a letter to one of the people who drafted the prenup 30 years ago, says he found the Divrei Ga'inim. The Divrei Ga'inim was this old spinker Rebbe who wrote general rules on Chayshim Mishpud, and Klal, in Rule Samach Gimel, he writes, if you write, Udeleika Asmachta, Ubelisha Uchali Potter, Mitaina Mine Asmachta, then everybody agrees it helps. And he writes, even Rabbi Yashiv would agree to this, but Rabbi Yashiv wasn't alive a year ago. But that was printed a year ago. Now the question is, okay, does $150 make sense or don't make sense? Are people understanding what they're doing? The saying Asmachta means, I never thought it's going to happen. Also, the Chazanish's opinion, any legal document, you can't say asmachta. Because everybody knows a legal document will be enforced. When you're saying, oh, I don't know if it's going to be enforced, or I don't know if it's going to be enforced, then there's a question if it's an asmachta or not. So like this, the nutshell of the machlokes over here is not if the kedushin is a good kedushin or not. It wasn't never a hashkafa machlokes. Do we sign a piece of paper before that speaks about gittin? We baruch Hashem, we live in the 21st century. We know about Gittin. It's not like most people learn Masechta's Gittin before they learn Kedushin. We know it exists. It won't put any strain on the marriage if you sign a paper. And we write a Ksuba. And the Ksuba is speaking about Gittin also. If we're not going to be married, we're going to pay a certain amount of money. And there, if the guy doesn't want to pay the money, and he tells her, oh, for you, I'll give you the get, and you forgive me the money. Nobody says it's not a good get because of that, even though it's become because of monetary penalty, because it's not a penalty. It's la halacha. So if the prenup is drafted in the eyes of halacha properly, that there's no shayla of a smachta, then it's not good. Rabbi Asher Weiss wrote a chiddush gadol. He said, look, the whole halacha of forcing a person to give a get because of a monetary penalty itself was a machlekes. And the Ramaz Machmer, we said the Torah is gittin is mekel. Therefore, to add a chumra onto that and say, oh, maybe this is an asmachta, therefore it turns into a monetary penalty, that's already too big of a chiddush. But that most people argued in Rabbi Asher Weiss, and they said, no, it's not too big of a chiddush. If Taka were Machmer not to do monetary penalties, then If this is an asmachta, this is a monetary penalty. So the whole shaila over here is this amount of money an asmachta? Is this too much? Doesn't make sense. Could the person come to the bezin and say, I never would have paid, I never would have obligated myself such an amount of money if I knew it was leading to a divorce? Or no, it's a number that makes sense and you're obligated anyways. I'll end off with one more chiddush, which is very, very important to know. A lady is allowed to go to her husband and say these words, Eini zon ve'eini oisa. I don't want you to support me. But guess what? All the obligations that I have to do for you, I'm not doing. A lady goes to work, the money goes to the husband. All that, we're calling it a fix. You get, you don't have to support me, I'm not going to do stuff for you. The halach is, it's okay. The Rosh has a chiddush gadol. What happens, a lady separates from her husband, and her husband doesn't want to give her a get? Called, what we call in English, separated. What the Rosh calls negureshes ve'ein negureshes. Divorced, but not divorced. Based on the Gemara. The Rosh says, a husband's obligated to support his wife, even when they're in the status of Mugureshes or Eini Mugureshes. Says the Rosh, what happens if she was one of the ladies who said, Eini Zon Ve'eini Oisa, I don't need your money. And then they get separated. The Rosh says, this is a new chiv, and now he's obligated. So the question is, could you use that new chiv of support? Why is that a question? Not all ladies deserve support. The Gemara says a lady who's considered a rebellious lady, a meredes, doesn't get supported from her husband. Whatever rebellious, the Gemara list of cases where a lady is considered a rebellious lady, she doesn't get supported. So one of the big questions on the RCH prenup is that you're automatically supporting $150 no matter what. Maybe she comes to Bezin and we'll see that she's one of the ladies who don't deserve support. How can you obligate anyways $150? So it was a chiddush from a yid named Tzvi Gartner, who's one of the geniuses in Hilchas Gittin, especially in Hilchas Gemus. He has a sefer called Kfiyah Beget. And he wrote a whole chiddush that was printed in many, many different kontrasim, that the chiv of mugureshes of the ena mugureshes, the obligation that a husband is obligated to separate his wife when he's holding her back from getting married, is even by certain cases of a meredes, and it's a brand new chiv. And therefore, you'll still be obligated to pay that $150. Once we made it a Torah obligation of $150, now it's not anymore a penalty. Now, if the guy doesn't want to pay it, he has one option. Just don't hold her back and give the get. So to recap everything, we have a Torah. Our job is to figure out how to enforce the Torah. That's our job. We have shayftim. We could find proper shayftim. We just have to get shayftim. We have to get policemen. Policemen is writing documents properly. Be it in business, make sure your documents are written properly, that in case you have to go to Bezin, it's written properly. Because the Arachayim HaKadosh is going to say there's no mitzvah to have a minu dayanim if you don't have enforcers. And we don't have policemen nowadays. We have legal documents to make sure, which is called an arbitration agreement, to make sure it's done properly. So much so there's a tshuva in Minchas Asher, Chelik Beis, Simon Kuf. If certain cases, Lamashal, child custody under Bezin, under New York, Bezin's not allowed to decide, is there an obligation to go to Bezin? He passes, you do, but he entertains it in a tshuva to Rabbi Yosh Sternbach. He has the question from Antwerp. He has the question, are you obligated b'chav? Because you can't enforce it. Do you have jurisdiction like the Tzanzarov, like the Divrei Chaim we mentioned before? And therefore, if our job is to make sure everything we can enforce, and we can enforce, and we can give power to the Bezin, and that's our job, the person should think, I have a ksuba. I can't do anything with a ksuba. The Rashba says, if you live in a place you can't enforce a ksuba, you're not allowed to live with your wife. Let me give an enforceability. Let me give the Torah its power back. I will end with this. I was one time by Rabbi Yashiv, and I was really, really pushing him to become a little bit more vocal, because he was really anti the prenup, become more positive about it. I said, look, this is going to fix up the system. This is going to fix it up. This is going to give Bezin its proper power. This is going to give its enforceability. Rabbi Yashiv turned to me and says, we say every single day, Hashiva Shefteinu Kivar Yishayna. We daven to Hashem then when he brings Mashiach. We should have a proper Bezin, and that's why he should bring Mashiach. Before Mashiach doesn't come, it's not going to happen. Give up and try to give it the power, and give up and try to make it more enforceable. But Lamaisa, though, according to the Archaim Kodesh, we have a mitzvah to try to give Bezin its power, to write up documents, just like you write up any legal documents, to write up a document. And that, I'm not, of course, ending up with my opinion, even though everybody probably chapped what it is. That's what the sugyo, and let's call it the hack of the prenuptial agreement. Thank you, everybody, and have a good night.